broke your glass, they fire whatever they wanted, and it's uncontrollable.
These are really kind of out of control college students, a lot of alcohol involved probably.
It's absolutely, if you go to the store over here, you have so many stores and the stores has the beer so cheap, and when they coming out on Fridays, they have the credit cards and everything, whatever. They have the afford to get, you know, if you come in to the stores, you're going to see completely pickups coming, the kids coming and full it up, the pickups. Behind the pickups, you see hundreds of cases. It's fun for them. We'll buy it, more fun. So when they has parties, you know, you have to come in on Swinner Street. Swinner Street, you know, just come with your camera and Fridays and Saturdays, you don't can sleep, and be careful if you carry right there. If you walk, be careful, you can be assaulted, you can be attacked, it's no problem. Everybody is bothered to everybody. It's a high situation. Never you see this on the report of the police. They don't have the report of her van.
When Dorothy's van burned, the police didn't take a report about it being an arson.
Either way, we called to 911, the fire department, and all those situations. They don't make any single report.
Yeah.
I walked to the police station, and they said we don't have report. We don't make report. The day was the kids exposed the tank container. She was there. She saw the kids run, she reported the kids, never get an investigation.
So Dorothy was an eyewitness to these people, and the police wouldn't take a report.
And my son and me and my family, we all see the kids, because I saw other things. You know, I come to the corner and I don't find a parking. I go over there, but on the corner I see two kids with white t-shirts, and I turn my van, I just go to the corner and I hear the explosion, a big explosion. It was somebody threw it, a big 50 gallons oil container, recycled oil container, and the oil container has mixes with the gasoline. So they, it was a lot of papers over there and couch and all those kind of garbage.
So Dorothy, when did this happen? When did your van burn? How long ago was that?
About 3 weeks.
3 weeks ago?
Sort of. And Toter and I were sleeping in the van.
Okay. So.
He probably doesn't like to be photographed like everybody else here.
Toter and I were sleeping in the van, and I was so used to fireworks anyway. I mean, I didn't put any attention to it, you know, but the kids threw firecrackers inside my van, and Toto nipped me on the leg. Hey, Mom, it's not out there, it's in here. And I got third-degree burns and stuff, but,
started in front of the driver seat, you know, and she trying to turn up, and she don't can
go. And I couldn't do it, so I had to come out and call her.
Yeah, and says, help, I hear help, you know.
Help.
By the time we got out to the van, there were 10-foot flames coming out all the windows.
Yeah.
It was engulfed. There was no doing
anything.
To say that it was gone.
So you're lucky that you and your dog lived, huh?
Yeah.
I don't mind.
That's like attempted murder.
You know what?
Kind of, sort of.
Look at,
at least involuntary manslaughter.
Who?
Because if you throw something, well, not intending to, you might have been trying to.
Yeah, and not intending to throw a bunch of gasoline under a vehicle someone's in.
Look at like 2 weeks after, a week after, I was parking with my mobile phone right there to do whatever I had to do, you know?
Okay.
And I see a guy who sleep over there, by the corner, north to south. He coming over there, and he don't coming into his house. He go all the way to the corner and turn, and shoot up his lights, the streets completely empty. And he came straight to my motor home.
Let's go.
And I said, why he turn off his lights?
Why? No,
maybe he trying to do something at his home and turn off his light and lost the control of the view.
Why?
My motor home was the only car was right there. But
it was very
that
scary.
Much dangerous. Every single week you're going to find accidents, fights, burns, and not single burn. It's a dangerous.
Homeless
burn.
People better just stay out of the way of those college students.
Well, you know why?
We they were out of their way.
They
we
have
all
fun
always
with the
home,
they have fun with the homeless people. They do those stuff. If I tell you about the tank containers, because they know somebody was sleep there homeless. If they burn the van, they know it's homeless right there. They what they do to you?
A couple bikes on.
This was fun. They come in the night, they see he's sleeping on the sleeping bag, and they come in. Boom, shoot.
Threw some bikes on you while you were sleeping on a sleeping bag?
Yeah. Right over there, up by the little tree.
So they have fun with the homeless people. Incredible. And they have very beautiful reunions. And this is, if you are in the university, you have to have the support of the students. So how this works? The students attack the homeless people, but they said, I support the students. And really, it's a big voice. The students are a strong voice. But they have to put more attention on the feelings, you know, to see how these people suffer every single day. You know? We have to put attention on how these people are in the fire line. It's they have to wake up early. They have 6, 7 o'clock p.m. in night time, they have to look for the tree. You know, like, where are you going to sleep now, you know, and it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, come and put the police come and put the light straight into your eyes, you know, it's paranoid. They can sleep, and then at night time when park and recreation come and people are sleeping, trying to sleep because they don't sleep in the night time, they take the sleeping bags and put it on the garbage.
You know what's so beautiful right there?
And that was activist Becky Johnson's audio interviews. Not sure, she may have gotten some video stuff too, at Isla Vista about a week ago when she was down there coming back from Los Angeles. She's tape is a little bit uneven because some of the people spoke very quietly, others spoke very loudly, but it sounds like there's some nasty stuff going on down there, and indeed, I have always talked about the value of homeless encampments to protect homeless people. It sounds like there may be a downside here, too, and that sounds like some students were attracted to these encampments to do some violence. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll get a report from Becky Johnson. I understand she is writing something on the subject and maybe calling in even as we speak.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hi, this is Becky Johnson, and I do have an update from Isla Vista.
Cool.
As you heard on the tape, they were very concerned about a meeting that was going to take place on April 18th by the Parks and Recreation Board of Directors.
There was the law that, I guess they discovered there was no law around camping, and there was the IVRPD, whatever it is, trying to put in some law.
Yeah, exactly. And they complained that they had been ticketed, arrested and ticketed and paid fines for years when there really was no law.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, the Parks and Rec decided to meet and, we don't have a law. Well, let's pass one. And so they did.
Well, I understand that they originally, you know, put homeless people on the committee, and there was a very positive sense that they proposed a law that actually would allow sleeping, though perhaps not camping. They made some distinctions. I was reading a story about that on the Daily Nexus. What happened to that?
Well, what happened was that the campers working with three board members, they drafted two versions of an ordinance. One version would have allowed Camp Home Sweet Home to continue to exist, and the other didn't. And so the board considered the two ordinances when they got there. And the testimony, there was a huge amount of, you know, many, many speakers showed up to testify at this meeting. 80% of them were in favor of the camper's continued existence and spoke in positive terms about the camp and, you know, urged the board to vote there. Jenny Jett said that the ugliest thing that happened was when two little girls got up, and she said they couldn't have been over 8 years old, and they were reading off cards that probably their parents had written for them. They said they didn't want a homeless campground near their school, which it isn't. It's like about a half a mile away, and that they were scared to walk to school or be in the park if homeless people were there.
Wow.
Yeah. We also got a report that there were the two homeless deaths that were mentioned on the tape, one on April 6th of a man named Dennis. I just have a first name for him right now. And his sister has arrived at Isla Vista to claim the body. The coroner has made a preliminary finding in that case of natural causes, but of course it'll be 3 to 6 months before final cause of death is known.
Really, that long? Huh?
For the toxicology reports to come back, usually, and then the coroner's report is finalized. I think it takes about 3 months, but they have to do it within 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
There's no word yet on Kit, the homeless woman who died on April 12th.
Was there any indication, well, I guess we weren't talking about death so much, but the van or the bus that got torched, whatever it was, and then the fellow who had the bicycles dropped on him, were these people targeted because they were part of the encampment?
No, the activities happened to them when they were not in the encampment.
So it does tend to support. I was wondering if there
was
a downside.
That was a huge issue for the people at Isla Vista Camp Home Sweet Home, was that they felt safety in numbers, and really Isla Vista is not really like Santa Cruz. There's just young people everywhere, college students. It's very overcrowded, and you know when you have groups of young men going around, a lot of alcohol involved, and a lot of press about how homeless people are bums and trolls and layabouts. The combination is deadly, and it leads to vigilante violence against homeless people. And all of these people were reporting numerous cases of this happening. So,
and
was this point brought up at the the Parks and Rec Department meeting?
I assume it was. She said that the speakers for the homeless were very eloquent. That she said when the end of testimony, she said there wasn't a dry eye in the house.
How long did the testimony go on for?
I think it was like 2 hours.
No, I think it was longer because I talked to Peter Maron. He was there for at least 2 hours, and he had enough, and he left.
Mm.
But
yeah, it was long.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
She said she was so proud of the way that the homeless people represented themselves. She had different words, of course, for the board members she called. So they were acting like a bunch of whiny crybabies.
Uh-huh.
She said the board members said they spoke of shit in the park. And despite the fact that there's a porta potty, right, that's access 24 hours a day for people at Camp Home Sweet Home. They said that if they allowed homeless people to sleep or camp in the park, homeless people from all over would flock there.
Uh-huh, the Rotkin argument.
And she said they got some bad publicity. The television station didn't help. They made an extensive report on a stabbing in the park that wasn't in the camp. It didn't involve anyone from the camp. No one in the camp even knew the people or any details of it, other than the stabbing was somewhere nearby. So they had this long report about the stabbing in the park at the same time that they had a shot of a knife and a whetstone that were on the table in the kitchen in the camp home sweet home. So as they were focusing on the picture of the knife and the whetstone, they were giving the report about the stabbing in the park. Completely biased in journalism that they're upset about. The Nexus didn't print the article that Janie Jett had submitted, and the Santa Barbara Press didn't even report on the meeting other than they did report on the stabbing in the park as well. So, and meanwhile, the shelter in Santa Barbara has closed, putting 150 people out on the street. And that happened, I think, before this meeting. And some of the people were testifying that they were seeing a lot of homeless people in the area, and that made them nervous. Probably directly related to the fact that the shelter had closed the week before.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jenny is looking for a civil rights attorney.
Well, now, what actually happened with the law?
The law. Okay, they passed the law that said that outlaws sleeping in any park in their district between 1/2 hour after sunset to 6 a.m., subject to a $20 fine. Of course, then if you add on the county cost and the state cost, it's probably $54 in reality.
Santa Cruz model.
Yeah. Those who are cited under the infraction ordinance would be banned from any park for 12 hours after the citation is issued.
And if they violate the ban?
I don't know what the second... I don't have a copy of the ordinance.
I don't know if it's legal to ban someone from a park for sleeping. I mean, you can fine them and jail them, and if they're engaging in a pattern of criminal behavior after they've been convicted, you could... You know, I suppose impose a condition of probation, but have it incorporated into the law that they're banned, that may be unconstitutional. I don't know.
One of the board members named Oriana, I don't know if that's a first name or a last name, said that the board cannot deal with the liability of having campers in the park. He also said that they can't let campgrounds, because it's a violation of their zoning ordinances, and Jenny asked them, said, do you have any letters complaining about zoning violations? And, of course, they had none.
Right. Well, you know, when in doubt, pull out the insurance problem. That's the reason that, I guess, Emily Riley wouldn't provide a bathroom access because of insurance at her restaurant.
At her own restaurant?
Right, where she had outdoor tabling and served coffee. And we've heard, I guess there have been similar, the Buttery does the same thing.
Yeah, bathroom has been closing all over town.
Here in Santa Cruz.
In Santa Cruz.
Of course, you're talking about Isla Vista in Santa Barbara and the
Yeah, it's about 12 miles north of Santa Barbara and right on the coast.
Are they still intending to come up to the Right to Sleep Summit?
I believe so. I didn't discuss that today, though.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I know that I heard that Nancy McCready of Homes on Wheels got a weekend job, and maybe more difficult for her to come up. She was going to be the van that brought the Santa Barbara contingent up, so we're going to may have to scramble for some of that. So what was Jenny Jett's mood? Was she angry? Was she resigned? Was she despairing?
She was very upset. She said that she couldn't even stay at the entire meeting when she saw the way that the board of directors were going with their vote. When it was a 3-2 vote.
Oh, so that two people voted in favor of the right to sleep? Or?
Yeah, I guess so.
Hmm. And when does the law go into effect?
She didn't know that either.
Uh-huh. And has the camp decided to disperse and everyone to disappear and hide into a hidey hole, or are they going to stay?
I don't know what they're going to do. She wanted... She was looking for either launching a referendum or getting a civil rights lawsuit going.
Uh-huh. Well, perhaps they'll have more luck down there than we've had up here.
Yeah, and she's saying, gee, do you know any good civil rights lawyers up where you're at.
I mean, it's ironic we can get an attorney to defend the right to, you know, get the right to speak at city council, but the right to sleep at night is a much more difficult and dicey proposition, apparently. One of the problems, of course, is it costs a lot more money to mount that kind of a lawsuit than it does to count a, to do a lawsuit that simply shows the city council is violating the Constitution by its processes. We're talking to Becky Johnson. Becky, any other reports? Anything on local homeless deaths?
I don't have anything really current to report on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, also you, of course, we have a little press release here in the studio. Santa Cruz homeless activist wins lawsuit against LAPD for excessive force at DNC, Democratic National Convention. Who would that homeless activist be, Becky Johnson?
Well, let me crow a little bit here, but I filed a suit against the LAPD when they beat me up at the DNC, and I just won a settlement.
Wow. And how many hours of that of your time did that take?
Well, it took some effort and some perseverance over time, and making deadlines, and phone calls, and writing, and conferences with attorneys. And I also had to take one deposition, which was local, but that was pretty long. It was like three hours.
But the L.A. district attorney came up and deposed you, or?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
And then
did you kick him in the shins?
Or? And then I also was required to attend a mandatory settlement conference that was at the federal building in Los Angeles. So one extra trip to Los Angeles as well. So it's not a small thing to file a federal lawsuit. It does take effort and perseverance.
You've also done a video of the whole DNC situation. I know you didn't quite get the attack on you on video, but there's a lot of the background of the police occupation of Los Angeles during the August days of the Democratic National Convention. Yeah, I understand. Are you posting that on a website? Or?
Yeah, that'll be on the Independent Media Center website in Santa Cruz very, very shortly. The clip of the attack at the corner of Olympic Boulevard and Figueroa, where it all began, where the police decided to crack down and beat everybody up within a six-block area around the convention.
Rubber Bullet City.
Shooting people, gassing them with tear gas, running them over with horses, running people over with motorcycles, clubbing. Just not the kind of behavior you expect from your local police department or any police department in this country. It clearly violates any kind of standard operating procedure. In any kind of police code. And so the city of L.A. just has to pay out all of these, you know, suits that stem. Mine is just one of them.
Well, at least in L.A. they get some satisfaction. I'm going to hope to do a report in the perhaps distant future, I don't know how near future it's going to be, on the claims that the city attorney pays out with respect to the Santa Cruz Police Department. I was able to get those records, and now it's a matter of tracking them down and researching them.
It's really the only way a citizen can hold a police department accountable at this point is through a lawsuit. Unfortunately, things like police review boards have proven pretty ineffective. We don't see district attorneys willing to file suit against officers for use of excessive force. And I haven't investigated the use of the grand jury in a grand jury complaint. That is another route that has been used in other areas. A federal lawsuit seems to be the most efficient way of holding police departments accountable when they violate procedure, when they injure people, and when they use excessive force.
Mm-hmm. Well, any other reports? Have you heard anything about the, I know the Armory closed in Santa Cruz on the 15th, or perhaps even sooner. I heard rumors it closed earlier, and then I heard that wasn't true, so I'm not entirely clear.
I haven't tracked that down. It was slated to close on April 15th, and ironically, we had a rain right after April 15th, so...
Well, there's going to be a big Earth Day celebration today, and Huff will have a table, Homeless United for Friendship
and
Freedom.
There's quite a lot going down. They're setting up the stage at the Duck Island Theater, or they were when I was there about 10:30.
Right.
There are lots of different tables and booths and food, and, you know, it's quite a day in the park there. It's beautiful weather, too, so I think they'll have a pretty good turnout.
Well, maybe I'll see you down there.
And so, you know, I encourage people who are listening to the radio right now to consider going down to San Lorenzo Park this afternoon for the Earth Day celebration. It's a very kind of Santa Cruz event, usually kind of low-key, but it seems to bring, I think, the right kinds of groups together at once where we can all kind of share information.
We could all listen to Scott Kennedy speak, perhaps.
Oh, do you think so? No, he's in Israel.
Oh, Mayor Crone, perhaps, will speak, but don't give any Nazi salutes. You may get arrested in the park. Well, probably not at this point. That would be a stretch, so to speak, even for the good mayor. Well, we're talking to Becky Johnson on the Isla Vista update. Sounds like a gloomy outcome on the legal front, but as we know, that in Santa Cruz, Camp Paradise has braved an ongoing camping ban for many, many months, and it wasn't the camping ban that swept them away, it was the San Lorenzo River, really.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on the determination of the people down there, wouldn't you say?
Well, we had expected Camp Paradise to get busted before December 1st. They had all kinds of reasons to believe that the police were just looking for the opportunity to do it. And there were, like, a lot of counter moves.
Talking about Isla Vista, though, is what I'm...
No, I'm talking about Camp Paradise, which you mentioned.
Yeah.
Wanted to respond to that.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was a lot of determination on the part of both Camp Paradise and the community members that supported them that prevented that legal bus from happening.
My question was about Isla Vista, though, Becky.
Sure.
The question was, what about Isla Vista? Will they continue like Camp Paradise did, do you think, or are they going to disperse? Do you have any predictions?
I did not hear any sign that they're planning on dispersing. They really don't have any options of where to go. I think it's very likely that they will stay until, you know, the ordinance hasn't been enacted yet. So it has to be enacted, then they have to come and cite people, and that's when they would have to decide what kind of stand they're going
to
make.
You know, perhaps they'll discuss this at the Right to Sleep Summit, May 3rd through 5th, that they're coming up to here in Santa Cruz, where we're going to be talking about, encampments up and down the coast and how to deal with the anti-homeless laws and also how to organize for a specific attack on Santa Cruz's anti-homeless law, the sleeping ban. Anything you want to add to any of this?
I think that's enough, but you are listening to 96.3 FM on your radio dial.
Well, actually, I suppose so. Thank you there.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
For to beg, and the begging I will go, and the begging I will go. For 7 years I begged for me old master, while he taught me how to beg, sir, when I was but a child. And the begging I will go, and the begging I will go. ¶¶ For 7 years I begged for him, brought him store of pelf. Now the Lord be praised, sir, I'm begging for myself. And a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. I've a little bag for oatmeal, another one for sauce. On me two wee bonny crutches, you can see me weave and halt. And a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. Jobs in England, begging is the best. For when a beggar's tired, he can lay it down and rest. And a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. Yes, of all the jobs in England, begging is the one. For we live a life of gone to do, and die with nothing done. And a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. And a begging I will go, and a begging I will go.
And that was David Rovics from his album Payday at Coral Creek, The Beggin'. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert North. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and we're going to be with you for another hour, and then we're going to kind of amble off to the Huff table at the San Lorenzo Park Earth Day festivities. You're invited to join us there. What's happening? Well, Tuesday is another one of those city council meetings that some of you know so well. April 23rd, the closed session starts at 11:30. Nothing terribly interesting there. 1 o'clock is a capital improvement program update by the finance director of city council in city council chambers. And I don't have the agenda for that. Actually, I do. It's a very short agenda. You can talk on capital improvements. And it might be useful for those who are looking to see where large expenditures are going to check the capital improvement program. I don't have that particular section of the agenda, but you can look at it in the library, in the reference section, or the city clerk's office if you're interested in that sort of thing. Then there are the usual 3 and 7 p.m. sessions of City Council on Tuesday. The 3 o'clock session has a large consent agenda, which means they pass it all with a quick rubber stamp unless someone pulls it off the agenda. And then depending on who that person is, they treat the person differentially as to whether he gets 1 minute, 2 minutes, or 3 minutes, whether all the agenda items are rammed together and he has to speak on them in a bunch, or whether they're spoken of separately and the public generally is invited. I myself have been subjected to this repeatedly at different times and seen others not subjected to this. And indeed, it's part of the lawsuit that I'm filing against City Council where they are using special procedures to deal with critics they don't like that, in essence, treat them like second-class citizens. The consent agenda has numerous items on it. The items that sort of interest me are, actually, there's not much on the consent agenda that really tickles my fancy. There is a use of additional rent from Lighthouse Liquors to assist the Homeless Garden Project to improve the building. And it's an item that you can talk about the Homeless Garden Project on homeless issues that are pertinent to that. Since there's so little time on the City Council agenda to talk about homeless issues, since City Council doesn't want to consider homeless issues, you sometimes have to kind of get in where you can and make comments where you can. Again, it's important to be relevant to the item in question, but it's also important to have an opportunity to speak. There is an administrative item, number 21, Cooperative Retail Management Business Improvement District Assessment. And what does all that mean? Well, the Downtown Management Corporation is subsists, as well as the Downtown Association, apparently on a Business Improvement Assessment Levy, a tax on businesses. Let me have some of this. I'm not sure if I have this all clearly clear in my own mind. The Downtown Management Corporation manages the pests, actually the hosts, so you may know them. They're these men and women in purple who wander the mall telling people to take their dogs off the mall, don't sit here, don't sit there, sell grass, we turn you in, don't bother select and favored merchants on the mall. Actually, they're generally pretty favorable toward merchants, whoever the merchants are. They've spent a lot of time around Yuppie Planter in the last month or two, running off the young people, punks, homeless people, counterculture folks. We talked a bit about that on the air. The Downtown Management Corporation's program is coming up for discussion and funding, in case you want to talk on that item and suggest that it's time for some real programs that assist everyone and don't just attempt to exclude and marginalize a class of people to the detriment, I think, of the entire community. And that is what the hosts do. You talk to friendly hosts like African-American host Terry Butler, nice guy, but again, they're all part of this machine, and what they do is they operate to sort of spare the police and the merchants time and money by getting people to voluntarily surrender their civil rights and move out of the area in terms of move out of sight, don't sit here, don't sit there, allow merchants like Matisse Selman and Alibaba of Alibaba's Cafe, Matisse Selman owns Sushi Now, in front of New Leaf, to essentially usurp and seize more than two-thirds of the sidewalk for their private business in a scheme to drive away the young people that were there. And they have done that. They've successfully driven those folks away pretty much. And sometimes they have people sitting in that fishbowl-type fenced-off area, at other times they don't. But the downtown hosts are a part of that whole process. I'm looking at their downtown host contact report from January 1st, 2000 to December 31st, 2000. And the number of contacts they have, they claim general information requests, 13,000 some or most, 32.5%. Summer visitor office hours, another 18.4%. Directions, 25.7%. Bikes on the sidewalk, 4.4%, 1,800 plus contacts. Dogs on Pacific Avenue, 1,700 contacts, 4.2%. Skateboards, 1,400 so contacts, 3.5%. Illegal sitting, 1,500 plus contacts, 3.8%. So in a way, it looks to me like maybe that's how they're gathering the stats, but the sitting used to be a pretty high percentage. Now it's much less. Other things are municipal code and youth code violations, 1.6%. Refer to the Santa Cruz Police Department, 0.9%. Aggressive unlawful panhandling, 547, 1.3%. Most of the reports are for visiting our office hours and general information requests. And if that's what they were really doing, and what they were known for, truly known for, I would be pleased as punch. However, I'm not, because I think that their function is a parapolice function in the main, even though they also give out information to tourists, serve as a kind of a visitors bureau, chamber of commerce deal. So they come up for funding on item 21 on the Tuesday afternoon agenda, probably around 3:30 or so. Then there is item 22 is a supplemental budget appropriation for the police department. It transfers $283,000 to the general fund, and $29,000 for supplemental law enforcement. That seems to me to be a nice chunk of change for the police. The increase is a direct result of the rate for the booking fees charged by Santa Cruz County. At the time the budget was adopted, the booking fee costs were based on $149 per booking, and that's now been increased to $177 per booking. I'm always willing to take a second look at police expenditures, and I wish the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, or some of its members, were willing to do the same. And I might say that there seems to be a young colt spirit, a young Turk mentality, a kind of a rebellious sense. People like Mark Halfmoon, who've gotten on the board, are asking questions that apparently are unsettling some members of the board, like the aging and arguably disabled chair of the board, Jim King, who has a rather long discredited history on homeless issues that we've discussed on the air in the past. He was part of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's subcommittee that, or actually on the board, that shot down the attempt to support repeal of the sleeping ban initiative. He's been a pretty conservative member on the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board. He tried manfully to stop the attorney that they had from answering questions that I asked him at the last board meeting as to whether he had also worked for the police department in Santa Cruz at the same time as he was working for the Citizens Police Review Board. He was candid enough to admit this. He claimed it was limited to one project, and I haven't investigated it further. But Jim King attempted to block that repeatedly. We had to keep asking the question until he finally got, rather than call the police and have me arrested for asking pertinent questions, he had the question answered, particularly since a member of the board, and that was Mark Halfmoon, was also asking the same question. And indeed, the attorney wanted to answer the question because he felt like his reputation was being impugned, but the board chair was using the old blanket of secrecy approach, and it was a sad thing to watch, and I don't know that I'm sure it's not an isolated instance. The board generally is pretty horrible, and there are rumors that Scott Kennedy is going to attempt to kill the board. And you might say, well, good, if it isn't worth a shit, then why keep it? And the answer is, it's a question. It's a real question. But if you get insurgent members on the board who want to start doing things like examine the police department budget seriously, look into the use of lethal force seriously, hold public hearings, change the standard of the police department so that complaints are upheld not on clear and convincing evidence, but on a preponderance of the evidence, as is the case apparently in many other police departments throughout the state, then the board could have some point. And it could be that Kennedy is hearing just these rumblings. He's delayed his appointment so that it may be the whole city council will now be required to vote on the appointment if it's lobbied for. And if you get some strong firebrands on the board, it's possible they could do something. But as I've said to board members who've asked me this question in the past, the only way you're really going to get anywhere on that board is if you have a strong, independent citizen organization that makes it a practice to come to board meetings to support claimants who are trying to bring concerns to the citizenry and to the board, and if you have some independent staff, because, well, I like the police CPRB staff more than I like almost any other staff in the city. These are the individuals who actually, you know, go do the reports and do the research and so forth. It's generally true that the staff of the city is so horrible, so conservative, and with their own agenda, that really it's the staff that runs the city and not the city council or their city council's appointed boards. They're the ones who make the real decisions, and the whole elective system is kind of corrupted by the power of the staff in that situation. So those are the two items on the city council agenda, 21 and 22, that I might be looking at if I get there and I'm able to stay there without being arrested, which is always problematic. For those who don't know, I was arrested on March 12th for giving a quick Nazi salute to Mayor Krohn after he inappropriately cut off a member of the public, denying her oral communications time in violation of his own rules, and I just made a quick salute to him from the side, which he didn't even see. Krohn, Fitzmaurice demanded I be removed from the chambers. Fitzmaurice obliged after Kennedy had the meeting recessed and I was taken off to jail on a charge that they cooked up after they had me in handcuffs, which is another illegality, and then held me for 5.5 hours on this disrupting an assembly charge, when in fact it was Fitzmaurice who disrupted the assembly, and probably would be very salutary if he were charged with disrupting assembly, not to mention with civil rights violations of a systematic sort, which he's been doing for several years on the council now, masquerading as a decorum expert. Anyway, so there is a lawsuit going on around that. Anybody wants more information on that lawsuit and how that's going, there's actually a good flyer that I was able to put together and get out, consisting of two stories I wrote to the Green Press. That's the press that's in the middle of the biweekly Santa Cruz Comic News. And great publication it is. You can pick up that flyer. The Santa Cruz Comic News is 50 cents donation at any newsstand where they have it, usually at the places where you get free papers. And the flyer, which has these two stories, you can pick up at the Huff booth at the Earth Day table, the Huff table down at San Lorenzo Park later today if you're interested. Think about that. What's happened, as I was talking about in the previous show on Thursday, we have a show Thursday 6 to 8 in the evenings, is the city council must have paid tens of thousands of dollars, or at least thousands, to respond to an 8-page lawsuit that we filed with a 197-page response, which in essence makes a number of amusing claims that the reason that it's okay to arrest someone for making a silent "you're a Nazi" salute from the back, which doesn't disrupt the meeting, but which offends the sensibilities of one or more council members, is that it was done during a non-oral communications period. The implication being that you can't hold up a sign or make a silent gesture at any time during the meeting except during oral communications. That's one thing they said, John Barasoni said. Actually, it was George Kovacevich, John Barasoni, the city attorney's assistant, said in his response to my federal lawsuit, which asks that the city and the city be enjoined from harassing people at city council that are speaking within their time limits, that are speaking according to their own rules, that are making appropriate First Amendment gestures from the audience, which don't disrupt the meeting. There has been a real intensification of repression at city council in the last 2 or 3 years, ironically, under the more so-called liberal regime of Fitzmaurice, Krohn, and Sugar. One of the problems, of course, is that they've raised expectations by, in essence, agreeing to restore human rights to homeless people around such things as the sleeping ban and community control of police, and then, of course, have done just the opposite. They've allowed more restrictive processes to come into play, like Emily Riley's enforced the camping ban along the river, put up signs in the Hardy West barring homeless vehicles from parking there in the morning hours every day, early morning hours. And the small bits that they do throw out, like this latest, you can camp in a city park for 2 weeks if you're a part of a fancy nonprofit organization with $1 million worth of insurance doing a conservation project, okayed by Jim Lang, which has never existed, and who knows, may still never exist. I Camp Paradise applied for such a thing, and they're still applying. It was weeks and weeks ago, last I heard anything from them, and there's been no confirmation that any of that is proceeding that I've heard. So, it's a pretty sad situation with Fitzmaurice, who, as I said before, is a Green Party member who's violating his own Green Party platform. It's a less sad situation with the Green Party, and I've talked about that, and we got a report on the Green Party previous meeting where they are actually, again, resuming their very slow attempt to address blatant violations of the Green Party platform and the civil rights of homeless people by the people that they, the Green Party, endorsed and elected, Fitzmaurice and Ed Porter. And whether that's going to go anywhere, who knows. But under Thomas Levitt's facilitatorship, if you want to call it that, the guy who runs the meeting, the last meeting, he was able to get a couple of things passed, including an endorsement of the upcoming Right to Sleep Summit, which is going on from May 3rd to 5th, which everyone is invited to, particularly homeless activists, because that's what this is really about, the right to sleep. But meanwhile, we have some nasty stuff going on from old Don Hubbard, old Father Hubbard, as I call him. He's actually a personable enough fellow. He's the president of the Harvey West Area Association, and he wrote a rather nasty editorial last Sunday, April 14th, which I tried to reply to in the Sentinel, but the editor hasn't yet given me the courtesy of a phone reply. That was 4 days ago, so that could be the that old Tom Honig is just too busy dealing with the Israeli crisis. Maybe he's calling in right now. Could this be Tom Honig? Let's find out, shall we?
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hitler was homeless.
Ha, is this Tom Honig?
Well, I'm just wondering whether that was the basis of your stiff arm salute at City Council. Was it to show solidarity with the former Führer's condition?
Well, I would like to point out that when the former Führer was homeless, he was an artist. He wasn't even a Nazi. He was sort of a disgruntled house painter. His anti-Semitism hadn't even taken force, so I must defend the Führer. And actually, I have no particular defense for the Führer.
You've done the stiff arm routine in the past.
Well, I believe in a stiff upper lip as well, frankly.
You've done the stiff arm routine and been called on it by Nora Hochman and Bernice Belton.
That's true, and there are a bunch of stiffs on the city council, I got to tell you, and they aren't working stiffs.
Late 90s. You have a track record of giving the stiff arm in public settings.
Well, I have occasionally risen to the challenge to say, in essence, you're acting like a fascist. That has happened, but...
So it was not to show solidarity with the future Führer.
Well, you know, I know that numerous Nazi supporters have been calling me asking if we're going to have a Nazi convention in Santa Cruz, and I have to tell them, alas, no, they misunderstood what I was doing. In fact, you are correct, caller. I was simply, in essence, saying, don't act like a stupid fascist. It was, in essence, the message.
Your listening audience might be interested to know that Hitler, at least by my reading and others, Hitler was homeless in the fall of 1909 and lived on a park bench in Vienna.
I'm sure that's quite true. In fact, if you take a look at a photo of Hitler in 1914, which actually I was able to find, they took a huge photo on the day that war was declared with the between the Allies and the Central Powers and the Allies, and one of those people they were able to figure out was Hitler, and this is a guy with long hair, a bohemian. So, you know, the hippie of today is the icky of tomorrow, if you don't watch out. And, of course, that's, we've seen
well,
that.
Well, it's not too far from Bohemia to the Bauhaus.
Apparently not.
The 12-year, 1,000-year Reich has much to be spoken of technologically. The cruise missile technology and the ballistic missile technology that we have, one can attribute to Nazi science.
Well, Wernher von Braun was one of the CIA's big assets. I guess not the CIA, the military's big assets after the war.
I wanted to ask you, Robert, about the Green Party.
My favorite.
And why would you, or anyone for that matter, be a member of the Green Party, or any party for that matter?
Well, the reason I joined the Green Party was because my homeless comrade-in-arms, Becky Johnson, had asked me to come to a meeting because she was trying to hold Führer Fitzmaurice, as I call him, accountable, because he is a member of the Green Party, a card-carrying member of the Green Party, and yet, strangely enough, the Führer was very unsympathetic to homeless civil rights, and in fact was pursuing an injunction against myself, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner. We were the Coffee Klatch Three, and I joined the Green Party because I thought, well, if I can be helpful in bringing this issue to the Greens, I will do so, and I did. I joined up, and they promptly attempted to expel me. Ingrates that they were.
Well, it's my opinion that political parties are the beginning of the end of honest attempts at democracy.
Mm.
Once you go towards that big tent, all-inclusive label, you're setting yourself up for double standards, for hoodwinkery, and for...
Hello?
Green Party candidates and public officials actually adhere to some platform, I find rather adolescent. And that doesn't strike me as being you, Robert.
No, I wouldn't say so. Yeah, that's the reason I've declined to run for political offices, because I tend to think that it's really a stacked deck to begin with, and worse than a stacked deck, it's a kind of a molding institution that affects those who get into it in a most negative way, at least insofar as their real social and political effectiveness goes. Although, I guess there are exceptions. I mean, people in political power have done good things, I think, frequently after there were mass movements and lots of sort of grassroots demands that those things be done, you know, and that, to me, that's really where the work has to be done. But the Green Party, go ahead. Did you want to say something?
I was going to say the idea of the embedded bureaucracy, which is what a political party is, which continues long after the candidates and the elected officials are come and gone, should tell us something about the nature of political parties and why they are unwarranted, and in fact fundamentally flawed. If you wanted to run as Robert Norris individual, I would be inclined to support you. But in my opinion, if you were to run as Robert Norris Nazi or Robert Norris Green Party member,
or Green Nazi, perhaps,
support you.
Yes,
you would have that baggage with you.
Indeed, and all those swastikas as well. I think that the institutionalization, though, happens beyond the whole party system. It happens in the government, and the government is, you know, unfortunately, it comes and goes as the parties rise and fall. I mean, you know, the Santa Cruz, most of the people who run the Santa Cruz government, almost all of them are, you know, they're not party affiliated per se, but they have a conservative ideology that rules the city, whether it's Dick Wilson or it's Chief Belcher or John Barisone or Cecil Cirillo. I mean, these are highly paid, very powerful individuals who've been in power for decades, or, you know, some of them for decades anyway. And they aren't even associated with a party. They're there because they're there. You know,
none of those that you spoke of were elected officials.
But nope.
If you look at the elected officials, in my opinion,
yeah.
I'm not trying to degrade or dissuade anyone from looking at their positive characteristics, but you can see the Democratic Party, you can see the PDF, and you can see SCAN written all over.
Right, but
here in Santa Cruz.
But I say the real power isn't with the elected officials. The real power is with the staff, and they don't get elected. They get appointed for life, in essence, it looks like. And they, you know, they never leave, and it's just sort of, it's their ideology, their policy, their preferences that go, regardless of whether it's SCAN or, you know, John Mahaney and conservatives.
The city attorney serves at the whim of the city council, Robert. You know that. They wrote that brief to counter you.
But they don't.
By the city council.
But the city council would never have the nerve to eliminate any of those officials. Therefore, that's a meaningless statement, though technically it's true. The city council has never discharged any of those officials that I've ever heard of in the 15 years I've been here.
You make a good point. I'm not denying that. There becomes an inertia, a bureaucratic inertia.
Big time.
That has a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that Barisone and Wilson and the rest of them are under the tutelage of the elected officials.
But in fact, the elected officials are under their tutelage. That's the reality of it. I mean, technically you're right, but even those who were muttering something about replacing these guys, the first thing we heard, you know, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar were going to replace them, but then, you know, soon thereafter we heard that the fantasy that, oh, you need five votes, which wasn't true, you only need four. Oh, but then we don't have Catherine Byers' vote, so you only have three. And now when you have people that could make changes of a significant kind, nobody wants to make any changes because the office has corrupted the individuals, or perhaps they were that way all along.
It's most people would rather have power than rock the boat.
Most people would.
And so in order to get power in the usual way, you go along with the prevailing trends and winds.
Well, there are many kinds of power, and some of them are good and some of them are bad, and you know, it seems to be the case that this kind of political power in our city council tends to be bad insofar as restoring rights to poor people goes, that's for sure.
Well, I'll use my remaining minutes to raise, once again, the opportunity...
I may have to have you ejected from the chambers, Bob, I'm sorry.
...run for city council, Robert Norris.
Go ahead.
As Robert Norris, and that it would be very dynamic. You would bring people together that haven't been together for years. You would find that you have endorsements up and down California and some very well-recognized names throughout the state and here in Santa Cruz and thereabouts. I think you would make a good challenger, and by the way, I think you would win.
Well,
if
Bob,
you decide to run to win, I and others, I think, would come out of the woodwork to support you.
This isn't the first time you said this, Bob, and again, I'm, you know, personally flattered, and I'm always up for raising issues, and I question, as always, what's the best way to raise these issues? My belief has been the way to do it is to do it from the grassroots level, and the problem when you start working on electoral campaigns is other things impinge, like money, connections, again, the need for an independent staff, and you have to know 100 different things about 100 different subjects. Your specific focus and expertise get diluted.
What you got to know, Robert, is how to make a decision, how to gather information and make a decision.
That's true, too.
You're no less intelligent than any who presently sits on the city council. And if you're right about the majority of the positions on the issues that you take, that...